Welcome to the Free Willing Diplomat Podcast. My name is Colin Cleary, and I am the Free Willing Diplomat. Russia's illegal and brutal aggression against Ukraine has been the impetus for this podcast. It is brought to you by a veteran U.S. diplomat who has served in Russia and Ukraine and many other posts, and who is now outside government and free to offer the independent perspective of a diplomatic practitioner. My goal is to get beyond the day-to-day and focus on the larger themes raised by the war. And now, on to today's topic. Will Putin use nukes in Ukraine? It is, admittedly, not the most pleasant topic, but Putin's repeated nuclear threats have been a central and shocking element of his aggression on Ukraine. And so I'll give you a short answer at the very top to our question. He is already using them. Although Putin has not yet pushed the nuclear button, he has used his nuclear arsenal already to intimidate Ukraine, the West, and NATO, or at least to try to. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February, Putin and other Russian propagandists have repeatedly, indeed daily, stressed the centrality and power of Russia's nuclear arsenal and Russia's readiness to use nuclear weapons. Essentially, Putin has declared, "Ukraine must be subordinate to Russia. I have decided to take Ukraine by force, and no one should think about stopping me because I have nuclear weapons and I'm prepared to use them." That is Putin's thinking. Might makes right. And at some point, it is possible that what some see as a nuclear bluff could actually result in nuclear use, such as if a Ukrainian counteroffensive pushes Russian forces out of Ukraine. A use of tactical nuclear weapons by Putin could set up a spiral that could lead to a full-scale nuclear war. As I said, this is not the happiest topic, but we need to look at it as it is. Putin's repeated nuclear threats underline that what is happening in Ukraine matters directly to the United States. If Putin's nuclear blackmail over Ukraine were to work, and he were to capture large portions of Ukraine and overthrow its government, he might well use the same nuclear blackmail in an attack on the Baltics, or make other demands on NATO. He has made it clear his demands extend well beyond Ukraine. We should not dismiss Putin's propagandists, who openly, at times almost gleefully, extol a Russian nuclear attack against Western Europe or the United States. So, for those in the United States who would turn away from Ukraine, who say it's not our problem, or that, like it or not, we should let Russia do what it wants in its self-declared sphere of influence, we need to wake up. In the 35 years since the end of the Cold War, Americans and Europeans have had the luxury of not thinking that a large-scale nuclear exchange between the U.S. and the USSR, or the U.S. and Russia, was something that might really happen. That was not the case, of course, for the Cold War generations, when the nuclear threat was very much on the minds not just of Western leaders, but of ordinary citizens as well. There was, of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis, which brought the U.S. and USSR to the edge of nuclear war and scared the entire world in October 1962, and duck and cover drills in schools and fallout shelters. Indeed, some of the dropping out of the 1960s was due to the feeling that if the world was going to get blown up anyway in some nuclear war, you might as well tune in, turn on, and drop out. Jim Morrison had a lyric to this effect, "I'm going to have my kicks before the whole shithouse goes up in flames." For people of my age, those who were in college in the early 1980s, the nuclear threat was still very real, and it came to a head in the early Reagan administration, at a time of very high U.S.-USSR tensions, of the U.S. versus the evil empire, of proxy wars throughout the world, and large anti-nuclear rallies and marches. A major anti-nuclear flashpoint was over the U.S. deployment of intermediate-range nuclear missiles in Europe to match those of the USSR. In June 1982, 1 million people turned out in Central Park to march for nuclear disarmament. In 1983, a made-for-TV movie, The Day After, depicted the horrific aftermath of a nuclear war on ordinary Midwesterners. Over 100 million Americans watched it during its initial broadcast. Reagan watched it too and was affected, and it may have contributed to the efforts he made later in his administration to reduce the nuclear threat. In any event, with the Cold War's end, with Gorbachev and the fall of the Berlin Wall, the threats and tensions between the U.S. and Russia diminished. This was the time of the peace dividend. Nuclear arsenals came down. Russia was reeling from the fall of the USSR, and China was just getting on its feet, concentrating on economic development. The U.S., until the calamity of the 2003 Iraq War, was the unilateral global superpower. Concern about nukes shifted more to the horizontal proliferation problem, North Korean nukes, possible nukes by Iran, Libya, Saddam, or India and Pakistan nuking each other. 9/11 raised the specter of a possible link between nuclear weapons and terrorism. Indeed, this was the stated, if tragically misguided, rationale for the George W. Bush administration's launching of the disastrous Iraq War of 2003. But the notion of an intentional, all-out strategic exchange between the great powers, notably between the U.S. and Russia, which together still had 90% of all nuclear weapons, had largely receded from the public consciousness. Well, that is no longer the case, or should no longer be the case, because tensions between Russia and the U.S. have been on the rise for some time, at least since the 2003 Iraq War. But with his outrageous aggression in Ukraine, Putin has brought the nuclear threat back with a vengeance. We are now at our most critical point since the Cuban Missile Crisis. The doomsday clock, which the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists uses to track the danger of nuclear war, is at its most dangerous level ever, 100 seconds to midnight. Putin's nuclear threats should matter to average Americans, but some U.S. political candidates are saying they don't care about Ukraine borders. They want the administration to protect U.S. borders instead. But here's a newsflash. A nuclear attack from Russia very much extends inside U.S. borders. An appeasement of Putin's aggression only increases the risk of an eventual conflagration. As noted, Putin and his minions are, on a daily basis, threatening the United States and our European allies with nuclear destruction. Putin's war in Ukraine is thus our business. If Putin succeeds in his imperial land grab in Ukraine, he will not stop there. He has openly declared that he seeks to forge a new European security order. Essentially, he is demanding a return to the sphere of influence arrangement that followed World War II. To the Kremlin, only great powers have true sovereignty. Smaller neighbors must yield to the demands of their stronger neighbor, or face destruction. Putin's subjugation of Ukraine is very important to him, but it would not satisfy him. He has said as much. So if he prevails in Ukraine, we could only look forward to more nuclear blackmail and pressure on other neighbors, particularly the Baltic countries, but also Moldova and Georgia, and perhaps Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Finland, Sweden. And if Putin succeeds in Ukraine by using nuclear blackmail, or God forbid, actual use of nuclear weapons, China may try the same with Taiwan. So the example matters globally. Thus, we don't have the luxury of turning our eyes away from the aggression of a rogue nuclear weapons state like Putin's Russia. So let me reiterate the central point of this episode. Russia's war in Ukraine is already a nuclear war, in the sense that, from the beginning, Putin has used, very explicitly used, Russia's nuclear arsenal to terrorize the West and Ukraine. Recall his speech of February 24th launching the war, which I will quote at length because it is so chilling. Quote, from Putin. Now a few important, very important words for those who may be tempted to intervene in ongoing events. Whoever tries to hinder us should know that Russia's response will be immediate and will lead you to such consequences that you have never experienced in your history. We are ready for any development of events. All necessary decisions in this regard have been made. I hope that I will be heard. Talk about a sinister message for a president to make to the world. And recall that 2 days after the start of the invasion, Putin took to TV again, at one of those ridiculously large tables, to brusquely order his defense minister and chief of general staff to raise Russia's nuclear readiness posture in response to hostile rhetoric from Western leaders. On April 27th, in a meeting with the Council of Legislators, Putin reiterated, quote, if someone wants to interfere in the situation in Ukraine from the outside and creates an unacceptable threat of a strategic nature for Russia, the response will be lightning fast. Decisions on this matter have already been made. Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK said on July 1st that Putin had made 35 threats of nuclear war against the West since invading Ukraine. 35. Similarly, as we've noted, Putin's propagandists and cronies have invoked the nuclear threat on a near daily basis. Foreign Minister Lavrov warned in April that the risk of nuclear war is, quote, serious and real, end quote, stemming from the West providing weapons to Ukraine in what he called a proxy war. And he's made many such statements, including the outrageous comment recently that Russia's, quote, special military operation is not an invasion of Ukraine. That man would say anything. He has no shame. Former President Dmitry Medvedev, once seen as a relative liberal, has now been liberal of late, but only in his frequent resort to nuclear threats. As in March, when he said, quote, the risk of nuclear conflict is definitely present between Russia and NATO. In May, he said that the Western supply of weapons to Ukraine, which again he called a, quote, war by proxy, always has the risk of turning into a nuclear war, end quote. In June, he said that, quote, the horsemen of the apocalypse are already on their way. Russian ambassador to the U.S. Antonov, whose credibility is epitomized by the fact that he repeatedly assured audiences before the war that any talk of a Russian invasion of Ukraine was pure fantasy, has accused NATO leaders of, quote, not taking the nuclear threat seriously. Yes, Ambassador Antonov, they are taking it seriously. They're just not backing down as you wish they would to Russia's threats. Russia's state TV, as I mentioned, is awash with commentary about Russia's use of nuclear weapons against the U.S. and Western Europe. It is truly sad and scary to watch. To Russian state propagandists, Russia's greatness is seen in its ability to lay waste to others, not to inspire them, appeal to them, get them to want to join with Russia. Russia is great because it can destroy, because it is feared. NATO grows because states want to be part of it, not because they're forced to do so. Something completely at odds with the Russian imperial approach. Dmitry Kisilov, known as Putin's mouthpiece, or Putin's propagandist-in-chief, played a bizarre video on Russian Channel 1 TV on May 1st. It featured a nuclear weapons attack on Britain that would cause a tsunami that would, quote, plunge the British Isles into the depths of the sea. The tsunami would carry, quote, high doses of radiation. Having passed over the British Isles, it will turn whatever is left of them into a radioactive desert, end quote. This is the sick vision of Putinist propagandists, drooling over the apocalypse, that is played nightly on Russian state TV. The head of the RT propaganda network, Margarita Simonyan, is similarly monstrous. Commenting on state TV about what the Putin government's reaction would be if Ukraine appeared likely to win in Ukraine in the war, she noted, quote, "Personally, I think that the most realistic way is World War III. Based on knowing us and our leader, Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin, there is no chance we will ever give up." So Russia would initiate nuclear apocalypse, but, she concluded, it's okay since, quote, "we're all going to die someday." That is a real humanitarian speaking. In May, the deputy chair of the Defense Committee of the Duma, Alexei Zuravyov, from Putin's party, said on state TV that it was, quote, "absolutely legitimate to, quote, question the existence of Finland after its bid to join NATO." He went on to say that, quote, "if the U.S. threatens our state, there is Sharmat, the Satan II missile for you, and nuclear ashes from you," end quote. So, it is now quite clear that Russia has gone rogue. It violates the most basic elements of international law, deliberately targets civilian populations with terror bombings, and its leaders and propagandists relish threats of mass annihilation via nuclear weapons. So, as far as nuclear threats go, we now have Kim Jong-Putin. Putin's constant nuclear threats, combined with his brutality in Ukraine, is indeed shocking, especially when you consider that his brutality has been unleashed against those that Putin himself says he regards as a, quote, "brother people." Indeed, Putin is killing Russian-speaking Ukrainian civilians by the thousands, destroying their villages, towns, and cities, murdering the very people he claims to be defending against genocide, quote-unquote, by imaginary Ukrainian fascists. But of course, Putin, in his brutality, militarism, and adherence to a perverted Russian nationalist ideology, is the true fascist, by any fair definition of the term, as is his fascist focus on the power of the state above all. In the Russian language, the word is «государственность». We really have no equivalent in English that I can think of. So, here's the question again. Would Putin use nukes in Ukraine? Actually use them in battle? The only limit Putin has is what serves his purposes and what he can get away with. If the use of nuclear weapons, presumably tactical battlefield nuclear weapons in the first instance, would serve his purposes, then Putin and his generals have shown they have the brutality and depravity to go that far. They constantly threaten as much. So it must be taken seriously. At some point, bluster can become reality. If it were not for NATO deterrence, Putin may have already used nuclear weapons. Indeed, deterrence is a good term to explore. Russia refers to its nuclear forces as deterrent forces, but Russia is not using them now fundamentally to deter nuclear attack. Rather, Putin is using his nuclear weapons offensively, not defensively, as a shield for his campaign of terror, to try and give him free rein in his brutal war against Ukraine. And so the Biden administration and its NATO partners are in a dilemma. They can't accede to Putin's nuclear blackmail, but neither do they wish to provoke a direct NATO war with Putin. What to do with a nuclear superpower that has gone rogue? Even the USSR operated, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, with understood norms on nuclear weapons and generally refrained from nuclear threats. Judging from the performance of the Russian military in Ukraine, it is clear that it would stand no chance in a conventional conflict with NATO. So nukes would likely come into play very soon in the event of a NATO-Russia war that Putin and his minions keep threatening. Russia's doctrine, assuming Putin were to stick to it, claims that Russia would only use nuclear weapons if Russia is attacked or if the Russian state is at risk of collapse. There is the notion referred to as escalate to de-escalate, if Russia is losing conventionally. In this event, Russia would launch a tactical nuclear weapon to force the adversary to stop, such as, for example, if Ukraine were to try to reconquer Crimea. Indeed, Medvedev has said very explicitly in another of his recent threats that this would provoke World War III. So it is all very dangerous. Putin has chosen the path of aggression and hostility to Western norms. He's been on that path at least since his infamous Munich speech of 2007. The Germans, the French, the Italians, many others spent decades trying to appease him, trying to give him a stake in the European system, but their efforts failed to sway him. Ultimately, the only guarantee for peace in Europe is a different and humane Russian government, after Putin. German and Japanese militarism were cleansed, but only after the defeat of World War II. But Soviet and Russian imperial nationalism and aggression were not cleansed after the USSR collapsed. Putin is committed to reconstituting the Russian Empire, to regathering what he sees wrongly as Russian lands. The USSR fell in large part because it devoted the majority of its budget to the military and security services. Putin is heading back in that direction. He has wasted an enormous amount of Russian wealth and lives by his misadventure in Ukraine, much like Saddam or Gaddafi did in wasting their country's patrimony on their misadventures. Nuclear weapons are far too powerful and destructive to be in the hands of anyone, but they are certainly much too dangerous to be in the hands of a resentful, misguided, and brutal individual like Putin. We can only hope that the Ukraine conflict somehow breaks the back of Russian imperialism. Until that happens, we must awaken from our 30-year-plus slumber on nuclear weapons. The days of not thinking about the threat of great power use of nuclear weapons against each other is over. The immediate task now is to contain rogue nuclear Russia. Putin is a danger to world peace. In his relentless lying and distortion, in his indifference to the massive suffering he has imposed on millions, in his waste of Russia's wealth in pursuit of his imperial fantasies, we must not be deterred by his nuclear blackmail, but we must recognize that a resentful and brutal dictator is capable of great harm, including breaking the nuclear taboo that has lasted for almost 80 years. So, once again, back to our original question, will Putin use nukes in Ukraine? The answer, as we have shown, is he is already using nukes for intimidation and propaganda. In that sense, Putin's war in Ukraine is already a nuclear war. Even though the actual button has not yet, and hopefully never will be, pushed, we should all sleep more uneasily now that a rogue nuclear power, led by aggressive and brutal Russian imperialist kleptocrats, who have made enormous strategic mistakes, and who continuously make threats to use nuclear weapons against us, have thousands of weapons pointed at us right now. A lot is at stake in Ukraine. Well, that's all for this episode. Sorry if I've been a Debbie Downer. I warned you at the beginning it was not the most pleasant theme, but it is so important. If you have a comment, please drop an email to freewillingdiplomat@gmail.com. If you like what you've heard, please share the podcast. We'll be back in a week or so with another episode. Thank you for listening.